All the sports, all the news, Sportsfire. Asking the questions no one else will. Join me, Graham Joffe, as we scrum down with players, coaches and administrators. 1 hour of hard-hitting, informing, controversial, entertaining sports talk. Sportsfire, powered by Rico. Hello again, everybody. Welcome to Sportsfire. Welcome to our syndication partner listeners. On Sportsfire tonight, we're going to be chatting horse racing. It is Sansui Summer Cup weekend. We're going to be chatting to horse racing analyst Andrew Bonn, cricket analyst and commentator Neil Manthorpe. And as many people are talking about, the Proteas snatching defeat from the jaws of victory yesterday in that second ODI against Pakistan. The general manager of Natal Canoe Club, Brett Austin-Smith, big news for canoeing, and just amazing what the doozy has done for South African canoeing, but even bigger news now coming to Pietermaritzburg. Sportsfire rugby analyst Dan Retief, and the big news today, Stormers lock and Bok lock, Eben Etzebeth out for 6 months and will have to undergo ankle surgery. And how often Dan talks about too much rugby and the injuries that the players are suffering. Also tonight, former South African-born American middle-distance athlete Sydney Marie, really fallen on hard times. Hasn't been easy since he's been back in South Africa, but you can't deny what a great athlete Sydney Marie was. And of course, Norm. I don't know about an athlete. Inserts tonight, BBC Football News, something on Michael Phelps' comeback, Manny Pacquiao and Jonathan Trott. At Joffe's, my boy, the Twitter address, Facebook, Graham Joffe, the website, sportsfire.co.za. Sportsfire, powered by Rico, South Africa's leading provider of document management solutions.
Daddy, why do you come here?
Because here I can be creative.
Why is that important?
Because that's how we create our document solutions.
Why do you need document solutions?
Because they revolutionize the way people work.
What's revolutionized?
At Rico, we have as many document solutions as a six-year-old has questions. Why? Because when integrated creatively, information and technology drive productivity and profitability. Rico. Imagine. Change.
Joff is my boy, first on his soapbox, and once again, those leading lights of South African sports administrators at SASCOC just doing as they please without following any due process. A recently formed National Jockey Association for Horse Racing is now a member of SASCOC, according to the agency that was involved in setting up the association. SASCOC membership for a jockey association. Interesting. Anyway, I put some questions to SASCOC President Gideon Sam today. Obviously, get no response from SASCOC. And basically, some of the questions like, when did the National Jockey Association become a member of SASCOC? At which AGM was their membership tabled? Do you have minutes for this AGM? Protea colours were awarded to the jockeys for the recent international. Who at SASCOC rubber-stamped this? And do you have minutes for this meeting? And is this not a misuse of the Protea emblem, which is a state asset? And I don't expect an answer from Sam or SASCOG anytime soon, as we of course know that the relationship with SASCOG and Gride Investments and their involvement in horse racing and their Pumalela shares. And I don't begrudge the jockeys for getting national colours. They are top sportsmen and women in their own right. But there are sports like rugby league that have been hitting a brick wall for years when it comes to getting SASCOG membership, and out of nowhere, a jockey association gets SASCOG membership. And I can only suspect some more horseplay from SASCOC.
This is Sportsfire with Graham Joffe, powered by Rico.
All right, we are hoping to get hold of Andrew Bonn, whether it be on his cell or the landline, and we're struggling to get hold of him. I know he's somewhere down in the Lowveld or somewhere hiding out there, but it is Sansui Summer Cup this weekend. So we don't have Andrew right now. What we're going to do is maybe just talk a little bit of football. And obviously after last night's Champions League action, some teams that are through to more the knockout stages of the Champions League, more in the BBC Football Report.
Hello, this is Ed Harry at BBC Sport. Manchester United are into the Champions League last 16 after a performance described by David Moyes as their best since he succeeded Sir Alex Ferguson. It was United's best away win in Europe since 1964, 5-0 at Bayer Leverkusen.
But the best days are still to come. then there'll be even better days to come. But it's a job. We won well. We played well with some outstanding performances. And I think I said it before. I said that, you know, to come to Germany and win 5-0, I think they've got a great record here, Leverkusen. So you know, that puts it in perspective as well.
David Moyes, whose team need a point in their final group match with Shakhtar Donetsk to top Group A. Wayne Rooney set up 4 of their 5 goals against Leverkusen, including 1 for defender Chris Smalling.
So I think we've been slowly improving, but tonight we've punished them for our chances, and we've been due that all season because we've dominated certain parts, but not a full game like tonight, and it's very well deserved.
Manchester City kept up the pressure on Bayern Munich at the top of Group D with a 4-2 home win over Victoria Pilsen. As expected, manager Manuel Pellegrini recalled goalkeeper Joe Hart for the match.
Well, I think that Joe Hart played very well. I didn't expect that he had to work so much during the game. I think that this is the match that the other team, including Premier League and Champions League, that they have more chances to score.
Already qualified for the last 32, Tottenham's Europa League game away at Tromso later could still prove significant. It follows last Sunday's 6-0 defeat for Spurs at Manchester City, which had some questioning whether Andre Villas-Boas's job might be under threat. Here's how the manager responded.
There's only one quarter that applies pressure on me, which is the press. So the rest, you know, at the moment I have the confidence of the board, I have the confidence of my players, and I have to move on to do a proper job.
Also in the Europa League, Swansea City host Valencia. Manager Brian Laudrup says that Swansea, needing a victory to progress against the team they've already beaten away from home, are exactly where he'd like them to be.
I mean, Europe you have to play, the Premier League as well, but the highest level you have to go on, you can't. I think if we, before this competition started, we said that going into the 5th game playing at home, we could decide it for ourselves, I would have signed it immediately. So I think we are in a very, very good position, and now we just have to finish it.
For more football news from the BBC, use your mobile phone. Go to bbc.com/mobile.
No word from Andrew Bond just yet. Just live sport at the moment. Obviously, it's the Alfred Daniel at the beautiful Leopard Creek. And can you believe it? Morten Madsen, first European Tour win at the SA Open last week. And he's currently the clubhouse leader at the Alfred Daniel. Morten Madsen, 7 under par after 65. A 65 opening at Leopard Creek. He leads by 1 from Alan Fassfeldt. Charles Schwartzel's in with a 68, 4 under par. Quite a few other players also at 4 under par. So James Kingston, 3 under par. Morten Madsen, clubhouse leader at the Alfred Daniel at Leopard Creek. More Sunfoil Series cricket games got underway today, domestic-wise. I think all are pretty much rain-affected. The Titans are playing against the Cobras in Benoni. Not much play there. The Titans 84 without loss. That's because of all the rain on the Highveld. The Lions are taking on the Warriors. The Lions there 149-2. Stephen Cooks, I think, got 70-odd again. Just amazing how many runs he gets. And the Dolphins against the Knights. Doesn't look like there was a ball bowled there either. Anyway, so we are going to talk cricket now with Neil Manthorpe, commentator and analyst, joins us now. Manners, hello, my boy.
Hello, Joffers.
Great chatting to you as always.
Thank you.
Okay, first of all, before we even get started with the Proteas, for me, very special, justified, never too late, Graham Pollock Pavilion at St. George's Park, honouring probably one of our real great, great cricketers.
So appropriate, wasn't it? I mean, a little on the late side, I have to say.
I agree.
But everybody will take some significance, I hope, out of it. You know, he's historically, I suppose, he's the second highest Test batting average of any player, behind Sir Donald Bradman. And you know, that in itself is fabulous and great. And those who I'm not old enough to have watched him play Test cricket live anyway, but you know, those of us who study the game and realize that he has played some of the great, great innings, 127 at Trent Bridge on a nightmare of a wicket in 1967, which is the year I was born, is, you know, it still remains to this day one of the great innings, and time hasn't faded it. But that's the sort of on-field side of things, and I hope that maybe it will signal a genuine coming together of non-white cricket and white cricket, Springbok cricket as it was known back then. It's a, you know, particularly militant part of the world in the Eastern Cape in terms of cricket. I mean, even here in the Western Cape, you know, there was a suggestion a decade ago now to name one of the stands after the Kirsten family, who have been played such a massive role in Western Province and cricket in Cape Town. At Newlands, of course, Noel was the grounds curator there, and Gary and Peter and Paul. So that was turned down. It was knocked back, and it was felt to be inappropriate, and white cricket shouldn't be favoured above non-white cricket, black cricket or coloured cricket. And, you know, and it's just been a sort of viperous wound which has failed to heal. So I just, you know, this was apparently accepted unilaterally across all boards, and there was no objections in the Eastern Cape. And hopefully we'll look back in years and years and years to come and say that was the turning point. That was genuine, when genuine unification started.
Yeah, I like what you're saying. And, you know, because I look at guys like Barry Richards and, you know, maybe something in Durban. You know, our legends are too easily forgotten. You know, we haven't forgotten our past, but let's honour, you know, whoever it is. If you're a great athlete, doesn't matter what colour, what religion, what ethnicity, if you're a great sportsman, you deserve to be honoured somehow.
I agree. I really do. And at the same time, I have nothing but... sympathy is probably the wrong word, because I have almost a sort of angry sentiment in favour of those who were denied the opportunity to represent their country, and I really, really feel for them, and a big part of me says, you know what, you have every reason to be angry, but at some point you need to let that anger go. Barry Richards, very interesting. The miners' club at Kingsmead wished to name their suite after Barry Richards. They call it the Barry Richards suite. They were told they weren't able to do that. And when they put the Barry Richards suite name plaque on the inside of the door, facing only into their club room, their suite, they were told they would be closed down unless it was removed. So they were, you know, that's the kind of hostility that we really need to move on from. I don't even know. Barry doesn't even know why he knows that he was a little immodest in his time, and he was a little arrogant and didn't always take enough heed of those around him. But that was a long, long time ago. And it's a pity. It really is. But at some point, you know, we all need to let go of anger and resentment and hostility, because it doesn't do anybody any good.
Yeah. Graham and Barry probably could have got us home against Pakistan yesterday.
Yeah, was that a choke? And it's the inability to think clearly when the pressure is on. I think it's when you ordinarily think clearly and you make rational decisions, and you've been in those situations before, and all of those players have done it. But Hashim Amla and AB de Villiers was going like a steam train. He's playing one of the kind of innings that only really he can, and I guess it must in some ways be very hard to hit the break when you're going at that speed and going so gloriously. But then for Hashim Amla and JP Duminy both to hit the ball in the air when less than a run and over were required, it was a real shock to the system. It was very interesting to me, though, to watch the way de Villiers handled himself afterwards. He was first down onto the field to console David Miller and Ryan McLaren, and he was the first to put his hand up and say, "My responsibility. I had the game won. I should have got us home. I take the responsibility." So, you know, he really manned up. Not that that was any consolation to anybody who watched it.
No, I do like that as well. But, you know, and I guess, Neil, credit to Pakistan, though. I mean, they came here for revenge, and now they can even be thinking of a series sweep.
Well, they could, yeah. Jacques Ellis and Dale Steyn won't be playing. They'll be particularly relieved that Steyn won't be playing in the third game on Saturday at Centurion after his 6-39. But they are under immense pressure, the Pakistan side. You might think that in one sense it's easier living out of a suitcase and playing all your home games out of the country, but that's not the case at all. They are under immense pressure to perform. There was huge criticism after their 4-1 series loss in the UAE, and I just think they needed an injection of fresh blood and fresh ideas, and they had a couple of debutants in Anwar Ali and Bilal Bhatti. And Bhatti has been an absolute revelation, and he's bowling in the high 140s, quicker than Dale Steyn. He bats as well. The two debutants put on 83 in the first game at Newlands, and sometimes that's all that's needed. The problem that Pakistan have had over the years is that there's no end of the supply of these young players who come in and make an enormous impression and burst onto the scene as match winners, but they tend to fade as quickly as they arrive. And Pakistan needs somehow to offer them some security and a decent contract retainer to make sure that they don't disappear as quickly as they arrive.
I didn't see much of yesterday's game, but I did hear Graham Pollock talking about selection and, you know, when there's no consistency, and, you know, that's possibly part of the reason. And, you know, obviously Dale Steyn and Jacques Cullis now released from the Proteas ODI squad for the third ODI. Dale Steyn needs a break. I mean, the guy gives 150% every time, but Jacques just come back into the ODI squad. I mean, is there a reason for him being released?
Yeah, I don't know how much you watched the first game at Newlands, but he fielded a fierce drive off his own bowling, and it hit his left little finger, and it dislocated it. So it's swollen, and it's very uncomfortable. Having said that, even if it was fine, I'm not sure that he would have played this game anyway. He's going to have his workload managed as he comes back into the squad. He had his workload managed down to nothing for a year and a half, of course, in the one-day game. But it's not going to be a full schedule yet. I suspect that the management and the coaches will keep an eye on how the series goes against India as well. And if it's a 1-1 going into the third game, he'll probably play. But again, if he may not play the first game, he may not play the last one if the series has been decided as well. I think the plan is that he'll certainly be playing every game in the 6 months leading up to the World Cup, if he merits his place, I have to say. They're just going to monitor it, you know. The feeling is he's 38 and a half years old, and no 38 and a half year old plays every game, apart from Inzamam Ul-Haq, but he only bats. Sorry, Misbah Ul-Haq, not Inzamam. He's 58.
Yeah, at least. But he used to run like a 58-year-old when he was 28 as well between the wickets. But I did see Jacques tweet as well, and compliments to you, because he said, what a Christmas gift. No better Christmas gift than buying a Mark Boucher's autobiography written by the one and only Neil Manthorpe. But I don't want to get away from it now. Quickly, last thing from you, Ashes, your assessment so far. A lot of sledging, mental illnesses. There's a lot going on in that Ashes.
There is a hell of a lot going on, and Australia aren't going to back off. They perceive, however politically correct you want to be, and I don't mean to in any way trivialise mental illness and depression, and it associates itself particularly clearly, and has done for a long time, with cricket. But, you know, the Australians behind closed doors will say, we've got one. He's gone. You know, he disintegrated. Mental disintegration worked. It was a really, amongst the many, 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 many articles I've read, about Jonathan Trott's situation, I think the best comes from Michael Atherton, who said, who praised Andy Flower and the coach and the team director, Hugh Morris, and said that they handled the whole thing superbly, and they were right to send him home, and it is a serious concern, and it's a concern amongst the game globally. Cricket is different to any other team sport. You know, you spend 7-8 weeks away from home. The game lasts 5 days. It's impossible to have a normal life. I think you and I have spoken about this. So all of that was great, and he said, up to the point where Andy Flower said, this is not a cricket-related issue. It has nothing to do with the test match. That he said that was when he departed from all common sense, because, do you know what? If Jonathan Trott had hooked and cut and pulled his way to 80 not out by the close of play on the third day, do you think he would have said, I'm not fit to be here, I need to go home? Of course it was related to the first test match. Yes, he had been suffering or managing a mental health issue for a couple of years, and the team management had been aware of it, but to suggest that it had nothing to do with the sledging and his low scores was a mistake, because clearly it did. You know, and also, what would Andy Flower and Hugh Morris have said to him if he had been 80 not out and had said, I don't think I should be here, I'm not fit enough? Do you think they would have said, oh, okay, fine, yeah, why don't you just retire hurt and go home? No, they would have said, no, you're fine. You know what, we'll monitor it again further down the line. So he, of course, he was in a fragile state of mind, and the Aussies broke him. You know, quietly, they might say the correct things publicly, but quietly they think they've got one, and they're going to carry on, and then they're going to look for, you know, another victim, yeah.
Neil Manthorpe, as always, a privilege. Thanks, my boy Manners.
Thanks, Joffers.
Take care then. And just by the way, just speaking here, I mentioned Andy Flower and Hugh Morrison. Here's some of the clip and just some of the interview with regards to Jonathan Trott.
Trotty has been suffering from a stress-related condition for quite a while. He's always managed it very successfully, and he's been a brilliant international batsman for England, and hopefully will continue to be a brilliant international batsman for England in the future. But he needs time away from this environment for a while. He needs time with his family. He needs time to reassess spend some quiet time with his family, and this isn't the type of environment for that type of rest and recuperation that he requires. As I said earlier, Jonathan has been struggling with this condition for quite a while and managed it very successfully, we've been on tour for about a month, and he's had his ups and downs through that month, and it is not directly related to that. Would also.
Yep, and that's what Neil was talking about when he talks about not directly related to that. But had he got 100, maybe things might have changed. As I said earlier, we're going to be chatting horse racing as well on the show tonight. I think we have tracked down Andrew Bond, because this weekend it is the Sansui Summer Cup at Turfontein, a big event, and it's grown with every year. Bonski, you there?
Indeed I am, Joffers.
Well, you're hiding somewhere. I know you're somewhere. Where are you? On vacation?
No, my wife's a riding instructor, and one of her very dear clients has given us 2 nights away to prepare for the sensational Sansui Summer Cup. So we're just outside Dalstrom. It's bucketing down here. Plenty of hail and lightning and thunder, and we're lucky to be around.
No. Well, I'm glad we finally got you. And Bonski, this has become a big event on the horse racing calendar.
It certainly has, and I think that Gauteng are to be complimented for coming on board, because it's all very well having the marketing expertise of Pumelela combined with the superior genius of Sansui. They've done an incredible job. As we all know, retail is the way to go, hence the fact that Vodacom has been so successful, so too J&B, and in yesteryears the OK Gold Bowl was an institution in its own right. So Sansui, hats off to them, Pumelela and Gauteng, for taking the bigger picture to a completely different market.
Joey Soma, the winning trainer last year, good guy with Wagner. This year, what do you like?
Well, I've been watching this very intense panel discussion that's been taking place on Teletrack between Joe Soma and Sean Terry and Michael Azzi and Pierce Stratum, hosted by Alistair Cohen. And it's Joe's revealed that he's nowhere near as confident as he was this time last year. Wagner just isn't the same horse, but don't, for goodness sake, write this horse off, because he hasn't gone up in the weights. It's just that he doesn't have the same form, and I must caution people that form is not permanent, but class is, and if Wagner rises to his best game, he may have a squeak, but I personally don't think so.
What do you like?
I like a horse called Master Sabina. He was a very gallant second to Tiger's Retreat in the Victory Moon. And of course, my life is lived by analogies. I always think of Michael de Kock in the same breath as Bart Cummings. Maybe an audacious thought. Bart's won 12 Melbourne Cups. Michael has won 9 Sansui Summer Cups, and he bids for his 10th with Illa Bella, who's a daughter of Fort Hood, and she's out of a mare called Illa de Vittoria, who I'm sure you remember very fondly. She won this exact same race with Huaishong, so it would be a very special part of history for Michael de Kock to record his decade of Sansui Summer Cup victories.
Which leads me on to Bridget Oppenheimer, and I know that you had the big celebration, a memorial for this incredible woman. What a lady, and how much she did for horse racing. And I remember you were just telling me when I spoke to you, I think last week, just it was amazing the people that came to pay their last respects to an incredible woman.
Well, words define me. Well, I'm just lost for words because it was such a touching experience, you know, to hear the things that were said about her, the heads of state and the people that she entertained over the years, you know, long before apartheid was abolished. She was just an incredible woman with incredible ambition to reach out to people, and her racing life was just a very small part that we know of. And she was, as we all know, the queen of South African horse racing. And perhaps tomorrow, I mean, perhaps on Saturday, Cherry on the Top with Top Weight will rise to the fore and give us one last recollection of the great old dam, the queen of South African horse racing.
Yeah, and that's what upsets me still about the South African Sports Awards, let alone the $65 million that they spent on the one night. If anyone should have got an honorary mention, it should have been Miss Bridget Oppenheimer. And, you know, even Mark de Kock. I mean, the guy cannot achieve more for South African sport. He doesn't even get a mention. It just something's lacking. I just don't get it.
Well, Joffers, when you think that Michael Roberts was 12-time South African champion jockey, he went to the United Kingdom and he beat them all in their own backyard. He didn't get South African sportsman in that year. Perhaps it was a tough call because, you know, Ernie was in his same year. But a mention, I concur entirely with your sentiment, a mention would be just enough to let us know that somehow they do think beyond the realms of the conventional staple sports that we all see on our television screens all the time.
Yeah, and Bozzy, I'm not sure if you know much about it, so I'm just going to, one last question for you, and I'm going to let you go. And this Jockeys Association that's now supposedly a member of SASCOG, do you know anything about it?
I know quite a lot about it because I had meetings with a guy called Steve Rolt last year because, you know, it transpired that at the end of the day, the jockeys need to be affiliated to this equestrian body, and they weren't. There was no unity between the two jockeys organizations, but thank goodness with the endeavors of Larry Weinstein, who's done a sterling job for the Jockeys International, they've got together and they've affiliated. I haven't been following it that closely, but I was part of the discussions, and I know that they knew exactly what the guidelines were, and we just have to be part of the organization as every other sport is affiliated to the South African Olympic Committee.
Andrew Bonski, thanks my boy, and I hope it's a good weekend at the Sansui Summer Cup.
Thank you so much for your time, Joffers. Hope to see you soon.
Cheers, my boy.
N, I've just got wind of an imminent security breach.
Don't worry, I've already destroyed Document Y.
You did what?
Relax, Bo. I first converted it into digital format with Document Manager NX.
Great. Now everyone has access to it.
I saved it as a password-protected PDF.
Really?
And I'm tracking any activity on it.
Darn it. With document management that good, I'll soon be out of a job.
You want to know my secret? A secure document solution from Ricoh. I'll even give you the password. Ricoh.co.za. Ricoh. Imagine change.
Yeah, it's interesting about that association with regards to the jockeys. And as I said earlier, I don't begrudge the jockeys one bit about getting national colours. They're sportsmen and sportswomen in their own right. But it's just the process and the protocol that's been followed about the Jockeys Association, National Jockeys Association, suddenly becoming a member of SASCOG. Surely they fall under equestrian or something else. And the fact is that there's a lot of secrecy around this Pumalela shares that SASCOG have got through Gride Investments. And you can't find out from SASCOG who sits on the board, who the directors are of Gride Investments. It's always shrouded in secrecy and it's a big dark hole. And I just wish they would just be a lot more transparent. And sports administrators especially, because they, essentially, from the sports minister down, they are running sport in this country. And in my opinion, running sport into the ground. Right, General Manager of the Natal Canoe Club, Brett Austin-Smith, now joins us on Sportsfire. Brett, thanks for joining us.
Good evening, Graham. Thanks very much for calling me.
No. It's big news and it's great news. Natal Canoe Club been awarded the World Canoe Marathon Champs for 2017 in Pietermaritzburg. You've obviously been doing a lot of campaigning, but what great news.
Yeah, we're very, very excited about it. And for the sport of canoeing as a whole, we're extremely excited and we're looking forward to it. And it's going to give a whole new generation of paddlers something to look forward to.
Is Pietermaritzburg big enough?
We hope so. you know, we're fortunate that the UCI has paved the way to a certain extent with the downhill and the, you know, the mountain biking that has taken place there. So we do believe Pietermaritzburg will be big enough and will be able to handle it, yes.
Build up to the event, you've also got two other international events coming to South Africa, 2015 and 2016. So this will give you a great opportunity almost to run them as test events.
Absolutely. You know, that's the main aim with those two events. It's also an opportunity to use them for our local competitors to get international experience before the main event in 2017.
And Brett, home of the doozy, Pietermaritzburg, the incredible success the doozy has had. Obviously, that's helped in getting these world championships.
Yeah, I'm sure it has. You know, Natal Canoe Club is fortunate that we've run the doozy for the last 62-odd years. So the club has a lot of experience in running major events. But I must say that the award of the Canoe Marathon Champs in 2017 is largely attributable to the South African paddlers who've been overseas and really created a culture of excellence in the marathon disciplines and in the river disciplines. You know, people like Hank McGregor, Ant Stott, Cam Schumann, Andy Burkett, Robin Keim, and a few others. You know, they've really paved the way for a lot of respect for South African paddling, especially in the marathon discipline.
Yeah, and I think you mentioned to me that is it Andy and Hank that are ranked in the top three men's teams in the world?
Well, the South African marathon team is ranked in the top three in the world at the moment after the last world champs in Copenhagen. And at the moment, Hank McGregor is the reigning K1, and that's a singles canoe world champion.
Right.
And Andy Burkett is the reigning K1 under-23 world champion. So we've got two world champions in, you know, three of the recognized age categories. And Natal Canoe Club also boasts two other world champions, or World Cup winners, I should say, more correctly, in the masters categories.
Doozy next year, have I got the dates right? 13 to 15 February.
That's correct, yes. We're really looking forward to it. It's going to be an exciting year. There's some new combinations that have formed up this year. People like Andy Burkett and Sponello Zondi, and Lance Khan, the reigning K1 champion, who's teamed up with Tulani Mbanjwa. And obviously Hank McGregor's come out of the woodwork with Jasper Mocky. So those three combinations are looking really, really exciting at the moment. And we're looking forward to some great racing.
So South African canoeing on the up all the time, taking the right rapids, I guess you could say.
Yeah, we hope so. Paddling downstream most of the time. But certainly South African canoeing is doing extremely well, you know, both locally and overseas. You know, we've got reigning champions in the Avon Descent, which is an Australian race. We've got reigning champions in various European races at the moment. And we're getting more and more people coming out from Europe to do our races. And we've got a bunch of Australians at the moment, you know, doing all of our races around the country. So South Africa is certainly a destination that is growing as far as marathon and river canoe.
Fantastic. Great for tourism as well for the country.
Absolutely. You know, I think that certain people are starting to realize that sports tourism is a huge industry, and it's providing opportunities for both municipalities and cities, but also for the different sports bodies that are embracing international events.
Yeah. Brett, I've heard from a lot of people, and you know, I'm not just saying this, but I've heard from so many people, the amount of work that you do behind the scenes and what you do for South African canoeing, and not just for the Natal Canoe Club, you know, I take my hat off to you, and it's great to have such a great administrator as yourself running, being the general manager of the Natal Canoe Club. If I can get that right, Natal Canoe Club.
Graham, yeah, thanks very much for that, but I certainly wouldn't be able to achieve anything if it wasn't for a fantastic team that manages Natal Canoe Club and administrates here. You know, the committee here is all volunteers, and they put in a huge amount of their own time and effort. And I must say that, you know, landing the world champs is definitely a collective achievement, both from an administration point of view as well as a paddler point of view.
Congrats again. Brett Austin-Smith, General Manager of the Natal Canoe Club. Right, so that's good news for South African sport as well. Nice to see some real positive stuff with regards canoeing again. Boxing star, this is not positive. Manny Pacquiao in the news this week. A court in the Philippines frozen his bank accounts over claims that he owes millions of dollars in unpaid taxes. The boxer called it harassment, said he has met all his tax obligations. And I picked this up from Rappler.com. It was the actor, American actor Stephen Baldwin, just a couple of days ago, talking about Manny Pacquiao.
Long time, absolutely. I've known Freddie Roach for almost 20 years through outlaw boxing in Los Angeles, and my good friend Mickey Rourke. So big fan of Manny's. I think he's pound for pound absolutely one of the greatest. And obviously, he's a tremendous man of great humility and faith, so I admire that as well.
Speak about faith, and this is the one thing I know I wanted to ask. You're a Christian, and Manny Pacquiao has been criticized, you know, for his faith, and he lost two fights right after he had declared he was a Christian. And so, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, the key to being a follower of Christ, there's a difference between just believing and following, is in the good times and the bad, no matter what, you keep your eyes on Jesus, and you do your best one day at a time just to stay humble and seek the direction of God in your heart and in your life. And that's what Manny's done, and now he's come back, and again, he's given the glory to God for this victory. So that's really what it's all about.
Last question. A lot of critics say he's not the same Manny he used to be, and he didn't knock out Rios, but what are your thoughts? Is he still the same great Manny Pacquiao?
Of course he's the same great Manny Pacquiao, because greatness isn't just about your performance in the ring. It's something that for somebody like Manny, still time will tell and history will tell, because the story is not over. Manny Pacquiao's success and legendary status, those books are continuing to be written. So I look forward to more and more good health and success for Manny, and just praying for him as much as I can and being there to support him, because I think he's a wonderful representation for our faith and for our God.
One or two rather strange questions in from the Rappler.com. Right, Dan Retief, Sports Fire rugby analyst, joins us now. Hello, Danny.
Hallelujah, John.
Hallelujah. But not hallelujah for Eamon Etzebeth. I mean, you love talking about the injuries, and not love talking about it, but you talk about it so often and how much rugby. And now we see Etzebeth out for 6 months, has to undergo ankle surgery.
Yeah, and we discussed that he looked like he was very sore when he came off at Stade de France. It's an interesting one. I've been trying to find out exactly what the injury is. They just describe it as a foot injury, and a foot injury that requires surgery. Now, that indicates broken bones, and the foot is very difficult because all those little bones, you know, they're hard to mend. They break very easily afterwards, and it really isn't good news that a player as young as he now has a foot problem. So I can predict that he'll be out for quite a while. And then we'll start getting stories about that he's wearing a special boot, that he's wearing a special orthotic. We've been through this in my career many times. Foot injuries are not nice. But I'm going to give you a thought. You know, now, was he trodden on? And that happens in rugby. It can happen. Did somebody aim a kick, or did they clash of feet and that's why it happened? Or was it that field at the Stade de France? You know, the field was shocking. The players were slipping all over the place. And it would be very interesting whether SA Rugby would take that up, complain to France that one of our players has been injured because of the state of the field. I think maybe one needs to ask around whether Etzebeth incurred his injury because of a slip and an awkward stance, or whether there was a clash that caused it to break. But something needs to be done about the state of those fields.
Yeah, well, you won't hear anything from SA Rugby, but I can hear Victor Matfield warming up.
Yes. Well, they're talking to him, and he said he's going to do it, you know, so... I in a way, you know, there's a sort of a quixotic aspect to it. You know, you retire, you're out, you take up cycling, you do a bit of TV, you find that you like coaching more, and then you decide that you'd like to play rugby one more time. You know, so whether it's tilting at windmills or not, let's see if he can pull it off.
Barbar's game, and then I guess for good reason that the Bulls wouldn't release Flip van der Merwe to go and play for the Barbars, and pretty much a similar, you know, they're worried about injuries ahead of the new season.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I have to really commend the Bulls for taking that stance. It must be quite tough, because I hear that the Barbar's fee is £20,000. Now, that's over 300,000 rand. That's over 400,000 rand. So that's a pretty good payer. Over 300,000 rand. So it's a lot of money that the players are cost. But you have to admire the Bulls. You know, the Bulls put in a lot to these players. They hold their base contract. They pay them salaries. They're there when they're injured. And the Bulls really need their players to be fit and ready to play Super Rugby next year. And so, you know, to put their foot down and incur the unhappiness of a player, well, you've got to admire it, you know. And for instance, Joffers, I have to say, this Barbarians game, I said it last time, you know, the Barbarians come around at the end of the season, they make the sound of a few pound notes, and everybody's ready to play. And the one player that really I cannot believe is involved in this game, and I know it's an honour and all that, but John de Villiers, I mean, he looks tired. We've been talking about that he's tired. We've been talking that he's overplayed. The Stormers are concerned about how much the Springbok captain has been playing. You know, he's on the wrong side of 30. We need probably to nurse him on, because he is now the captain and he's been quite successful. So what he's doing in this Barbarians game, you know, defies logic.
RB Rugby World Cup in England. I see they've announced the round robin games, and nice times for South Africa. I think it's three of our games are at 7 o'clock South African time, and then one at 10 o'clock South African time. So it's actually going to be good for viewing as well.
Yeah, I actually, when I did the quick sums, I actually thought they were even earlier than that. That the three of them are sort of at 5 o'clock, and only one game is later. You know. You doing the time difference there. I'd have to look what the time difference at that time of year is. But in England, the times are pretty good. You know, the day is going to be similar. Hopefully the weather will be better. It won't be that bad in the evening. And it's always nice, you know, to play with a little bit of daylight left. But, you know, I have to sort of question all the talk about whether it's early or late. We won the Rugby World Cup in France in 07. When all our games in Paris were 9 o'clock at night, you know. So really, what point are they making?
Valid. And ticket prices, did you tweet about it, or did I see something that maybe a ticket for the final would cost you 12,000 rand? Is that sounds?
Yeah,
right?
I did. And I actually made a mistake to start with, because when I first received the little chart, I didn't blow it up big enough, and I misread one of the figures for £515. And then I realized that it was actually a 7. So the top ticket for the final is going to be £715, 12,000 rand. You know, so South Africans are really going to battle to see that World Cup. But you know what the problem is? That all South Africans have relatives, have children, have a long-lost aunt or uncle, have a grandfather, have somebody who's returned to Old Blighty. They have a connection somewhere near London where they can get free accommodation. South Africans go there a lot. So everybody's intent on going. There's not a big time change. It's not the most expensive international flight. But getting tickets is going to be very, very hard to do. And the IRB has gone for the situation that they had in New Zealand, where the packages will be handed out to tour companies, and they just load the price. So one way of foreigners to get tickets from all over the world, not just us, is to buy a package. And a lot of South Africans don't want to do that, because then you're locked into having to stay at certain places, you're locked into sort of set trips, and very often you end up with people that you don't really, whose company you don't like on tour. You know, that South Africans would really like to turn up and buy a ticket, but that's going to be hard to do. And then they will go again with the lottery system, because they really believe they want to encourage and reward rugby fans by letting them have first bite of the tickets. And the way they're going to do that is just as they did in New Zealand, there will be lotteries all over the world, and the tickets will first go to members of rugby clubs. And I think that's fair. You know, I think what they're saying is that people who have put some money down, who go week in and week out on bitterly cold nights to support a club team, they should have first call. But even those people won't be allowed to sort of put their name down for 20 tickets, you know. So, you know, be assured and do whatever you have to do now. If you have to join Richmond Rugby Club or Harlequins Rugby Club at a distance, you know, become a member in the colonies, do it, and so that you can get into the lottery. But getting tickets is going to be very, very hard to do, and the tickets that are going to be available are going to be immensely expensive.
Dan Retief, Sportsfire rugby analyst. Danny, we'll catch up again on Monday after the Barbos game.
Yeah, I look forward to that. You know, and I hope there are not any more injuries. And you know, talking about hemispheres and having sort of, you know, we hate them when we play them. But because they're in our competition, good luck to the Wallabies against Wales this weekend.
Cheers then, Dan. Lots of talk about US swimming great Michael Phelps making a comeback. And today I was reading on BBC on the website that a former coach believes Phelps can medal in Rio in 2016 if he gets back into the pool now. And this was from Fumble.
Swimmer Michael Phelps rejoins the U.S. drug testing program, a sign that the most decorated athlete in Olympic history might be headed for the 2016 Rio Olympics. Phelps told the Associated Press this week that nothing is set in stone, though clearly he's enjoyed getting back into shape. He's down about 15 pounds and working out with his former team at the North Baltimore Aquatic Club. If I decide to keep going and swim again, then I'll compete, Phelps told the AP. If I don't, he added, letting out a big laugh, I guess I'll re-retire. Just don't compare me to Brett Favre. The U.S. Anti-Doping Agency said Phelps was among the athletes who underwent doping tests in the third quarter, the period ending September 30th. He was tested twice. His former coach and close friend Bob Bowman said Phelps actually re-entered the program near the end of the second quarter, but he wasn't tested and therefore wasn't listed that time in USADA's quarterly report. He'd be eligible to compete again in March, according to Bowman. Bowman was also non-committal on the subject of Rio 2016. If he chooses to compete, he's got some time. To be perfectly honest, he's not anywhere near being able to compete in a meet or anything like that. We're just getting started on improving his fitness. We'll see where that goes. For more on your favorite athletes, visit us at thefumble.com.
Yeah, and that comparison to Brett Favre, who's a quarterback, played for the Green Bay Packers, who also kept coming out of retirement. So Phelps said he doesn't want to be compared to a Brett Favre. Celebrity birthdays born this day, 1959, the cyclist Stephen Roche, the cricketer Nick Knight, and also the New Zealand Rugby Union player Greg Somerville, born this day, 1977. A blast from the past tonight, one of South Africa's and USA's great middle distance athletes. Sydney Marie now joins us on Sportsfire. Sydney, great to have you on the show.
Thank you. Good evening and good evening to the listeners.
Born 9th of September 1956 in Cullinan. Did you grow up in Cullinan or are you still running?
Yes, I'm still running. Yes, I grew up in Cullinan and stayed there until at age 12. When were then forcefully removed by the government when they were cleaning what they then called black spots, were then forcefully removed to Hammanskraal. Lived in Hammanskraal for about 2-3 years and then moved to Atteridgeville in Pretoria.
So where did you do your schooling?
I started part of my schooling in Cullinan, part in Hammanskraal, but most of it here in Atteridgeville, and part of the high school part was attended at the Vlakfontein Technical High School in Mamelodi.
I just want to go back to when you started running. How did you get your start in the sport? What was your ambition and what was your motivation to start running?
I was very ambitious to be a soccer player. I wanted to be a soccer player. I'm the eldest of five. So my biggest challenge was that when my parents came back from work, I had to ensure that their tea was ready. As they entered the door and they sit down, I had to serve them tea. I had to make sure that the pots were on the stove so my mother could cook when she walked in the door after she drank her tea. So the challenge was that I did not play long enough with my friends in the street. Soccer, as you know, is a team sport. So I decided then, based on all the training that I, distance training I did for soccer, because I wanted to be one of the best soccer players, I had endurance. So when I started running, I had immediate success and decided to stick with it.
I guess, and I can't imagine coming from Hammanskraal and then Attridgeville and then a decision to move to the United States. At what age was that and how did that all come about?
Well, it was based on 1976, the 15th of November, the sub 4 minute mile that I was able to perform in PE at the Vernon Barnes Memorial. I ran 3:57.9 in that event. The prize then, at the time, I was voted the Junior Black Sportsman of the Year. During those days, we had the Colored Sportsman of the Year, the Indian Sportsman of the Year, the White Sportsman of the Year, and I was the Black Sportsman of the Year then, Junior Black Sportsman of the Year.
And then you go over to the United States, so many highlights, and I think if something sticks out, it actually was in Cologne, I think it was August of 83 when you broke Steve Ovett's world record in the 1500. That 3:31.24, would that be your greatest run ever?
That, because it was a world record, was the greatest run ever. I've had many other exciting runs, obviously, later on. I was able to go sub 3:30 in the 1500 meters, but really going to bed knowing that you are the world record holder is one of the most fulfilling times in somebody's life.
And running in the United States, and I guess it must be a real tinge of sadness and when you've born in South Africa, but that you end up have to run for another country.
It was, but at the same time, there was an opportunity given for one to be able to go to school. For me, had I stayed in South Africa, I would not have been able, my parents would not have been able to afford to send me to university. So I ran for the university, I later on ran for the United States, but most of all, I was able to get an education.
Then you moved back to South Africa, I think it was 1995, and it hasn't been an easy time for you though, Sydney.
South Africa, really coming back to South Africa, in the beginning was quite exciting because I had then worked for a company called Fleming Martin. They then asked me to come back to spearhead some of the projects that they had in South Africa. Later on, really, I joined the JSE itself, worked for Russell Lobsher as head of marketing and communications. Quite an exciting time. At the same time, was the special advisor to the Minister of Trade and Industry. The troubles really started thereafter because I had been so successful in mainly negotiating in the SADC region for South Africa. Thereafter, after having been so successful, the minister asked me to go and head the National Empowerment Fund because there had been some major problems at the National Empowerment Fund. And the problem started there because obviously there was no, what the minister then called a viable business plan. So because it was not a business plan, a business plan had to be designed. The minister had been criticized so much in the past that he didn't care about BEE, and that's why the National Empowerment is not working. So it was then decided that by the DG and the minister that Deutsche Bank would then do the design business plan and implement. So really there was no BEE structure to Deutsche Bank at the time. So the problem started later on when they had to justify why they gave Deutsche Bank the mandate without tendering. There was basically no tendering and Deutsche Bank had no BEE. So then in the attempt to know that they were designing the business plan for free. But obviously, as we know, there's no free lunch. The implementation thereof was when the challenge started, because when Deutsche was approached to then was informed that they would have to tender for the implementation part of it. I had already signed the contract that arrived on my desk. I had signed it, which then had given Deutsche both the design and implementation rights. And so the problem started when then there was an attempt by the minister and the DG to try to get Deutsche to understand that they had overlooked the tender process. And then we had then to pay Deutsche. And sure, that's where I fell in trouble when I was instructed to then find a way of paying Deutsche, obviously I got in trouble. Or the other point is I had, or the money had to be then taken out of the National Empowerment Fund in order to pay Deutsche, so that they would then be agreeable that there be an open tender process. But as you know, it's very difficult to implement somebody else's business plan.
Sure.
So Deutsche would have won anyway, but there was no guarantee at the same time that they would get the mandate for the implementation of the business plan. And because obviously I had then, because I had been instructed to make sure that Deutsche remained and that Deutsche was paid and then that there was peace, I then transferred the money as instructed, and that's how I got in trouble.
Sean,
taught me a big lesson, and sure. I would like to say, young people out there, please never do things where that you can never explain, particularly if the instruction is given verbally.
100%.
I was not told to steal. There was no stealing. It was just that the funds were transferred with unprocedurally. There was no written instructions to do it. See, and when the time came, everybody denied that we asked him to do ABC, you see.
Sydney, no question about it. And just quickly before I let you go, I mean, obviously we all learn these lessons, but it's great that you're now getting back on your feet, and Jobs Opportunity Program, is that something that has started already?
No, we are in the process of getting it kick-started in South Africa. This program, I think, is one of the most exciting programs that the youth of South Africa will benefit from, particularly the young athletes. It gives them the opportunity to have a foot in the door while they're still competing. They would learn a job skill, so when they step away from the world of sport, there's something to fall back on.
Sydney Marie, one of the great middle distance athletes, South African born, American as well, running for the States. Sydney, many thanks for your time on Sports Fire tonight. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
Cheers, and Sydney Marie. Best on the TV for the last part of the week. Alfred Daniel, obviously, at Leopard Creek. We talked about the scores earlier. Dubai Sevens, Varsity Beach Volleyball. Saturday, South Africa, Pakistan, that third ODI. You got the golf again. Sansui Summer Cup, Wales against Australia. That's the one international rugby game on Saturday. PSL, looks like they're four games. Pick of the games, Pirates against Bloem Celtic, Chiefs against Free State Stars. English Premiership, Cardiff Arsenal, Everton against Stoke, Newcastle against West Brom. Sunday, Man United, Tottenham, Liverpool against Hull, Southampton and Man City against Swansea. I think it's actually Hull against, I think Southampton against Man United maybe. Sundowns against Swallows, the lone PSL game, final round in the golf at Leopard Creek. Hello, Norm.
How's it going?
Hello, my boy. Sorry we came to you late.
No, it's fine. Hey, you know, at least you talk to me.
What's
new? At least this time you're not looking at a computer trying to find more material.
How things?
Damn, it's raining down here, eh?
Boy, it's raining all over the place.
Yeah, look, I mean, I'm not trying to get geographical. I'm saying where I am. There's meant to be sunshine. Graham, when it rains down here, the potholes are bad, eh?
Yeah, I can imagine.
No, the potholes, I'm telling you, they're worse than Oprah Winfrey's thighs. Honestly. But Graham, I want to ask you now, you know, I'm a little bit concerned about the commentators.
What sport?
All of them. You know, they've just changed. You know, back in the day, eh, Graham, when I was playing cricket, and a guy hit a four, or six, then the oak said, he worked the ball. He had him so hard gemoker that the seam split like Charlie Weir's lip at the Portuguese hall. Do you know what I mean? Or he clapped that kookaburra so hard they now extinct. Or he moved that ball so hard that the cow that leather came from is crying.
And they don't do it anymore?
No, Graham. Now they say he stroked the delivery with the finesse of a Russian ballerina, as the ball galloped with the speed of a handsome knight on his thoroughbred stallion riding to save his beloved betrothed. Seriously, Graham, what is that about?
Where did you hear that?
On a TV. Well, I wouldn't hear the commentary if I was at the stadium. They don't talk that loud. But it's even with the rugby.
Yeah.
You know, it's like trying to negotiate. It's like when parents take out the kids and they give him a menu and the guy's 3 years old. You know what I mean? It just used to be bucks to it. That was okay, wait, that sounds a little bit, you know, like maybe a bit of a gay pride thing, but it was bucks to it. That was your scrum. Now they go to the third umpire and he's saying a player number 3 in the green led with the elbow and connected and made an unplay. Oh, why can't he just say the number 7 moved the other oak, send him off? Graham, I don't understand what these oaks are talking about anymore. And I've got stand at 6, Graham.
As much as that?
Yeah, well, I did stand at 5 twice. So. And then Graham, one more thing.
Yeah.
You know what? You know, you've been estimated is out for 5 months, eh?
Yeah.
And it says for ankle injuries.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's true.
Why?
You know, Graham, there's a lot of kissing going on in sports, eh? Like kiss the trophies. When the soccer players run on, they pick up a piece of grass and then they kiss it and throw it up to the sky. You know, in the rugby they run and they give each other a little squeeze on the bum, a dry hump and a kiss. Even the cricketers now. I'm telling you, Itzebet is out for 5 months because he's got one Moorsabi cold sore.
Bye-bye, Norm.
Okay, I love you, Graham. I'll see you next Thursday.
Good night.
Oh, sorry, this Thursday. Okay, I love you, bye.
Bye. From all the team at Sports Fire, good night.
All the sports, all the news, Sports Fire. Asking the questions no one else will. Join me, Graham Joffe, as we scrum down with players, coaches and administrators. 1 hour of hard-hitting, informing, controversial, entertaining sports talk. Sportsfire, powered by Ricoh.